I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonderroot artist feature. I have the pleasure today of speaking with multidisciplinary artist Michi Miko. Michi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. How are you?
Doing very well. What's new in your world these days?
Well, there's a lot going on right now. It's like, where do you want to start?
Well,
I got a garden going right now. And I'm trying to keep that garden from becoming an art project, but it's fast becoming an art project.
What are you growing right now?
Cucumbers is a big hit. They are the big hit. I got tomatoes, tomatillos, okra, squash, collard greens, and leeks. That's about it.
Have you always been a food guy?
Sure. I mean, look at my size. I like food, but this is my first adventure into growing my own food. Like, when I grew up at my parents' house, we never really bought produce because they grew everything in their garden. So, like, it wasn't until I moved out of their house that I had to pay for produce, which I found out was expensive.
Rural South versus the urban South. What do those two things mean to you right now?
Well, in some ways they're one and the same. With television, internet, the so-called rural can kind of get an urban experience. And those that are in sort of an urban environment usually come from rural areas. So I think they co-mingle together, which is where I base a lot of my work. So that's kind of where I exist, sort of like this MTV, BET, old BET, country sort of. It's a weird space to be in.
You mentioned old BET, old MTV.
Yeah.
Do you watch any of the new platforms where a lot of that content is now headed, like a World Star Hip Hop or anything like that? Do you get into any of that content?
I don't have cable. I haven't had a TV in probably 5 years. I think, John, you gave me my last TV.
I got
another one. And I put that TV out on the curb one day because I got pissed at how everyone loved Raymond, but everybody hated Chris. And so I just got rid of my TV. And I haven't had cable in 12 years. So, like, I don't ever watch any of the new MTV or what's popular on TV. But to address the World Star thing, like, I do, like, participate in it. I hate it. But then for some reason, I'm drawn to it because in some ways, I think it's like a clear understanding of our culture right now, youth culture, and where our culture is headed. You know, it's like, how did we get to this moment to where fighting and violence becomes like the norm, you know what I mean? Or like the absurdity becomes the norm. So I'm sort of interested in it from a real thinker's point of view. If that's possible, watching World Star. I hate that shit.
Well, as it relates to your process and how you think about pop culture and art and how you bring everything together, how do you embrace that?
Well, you just have to look at it for what it is. Like, it's hard to explain, man, because these are some people's realities, you know? And then you don't want them to be, but they are. But then it's like, can you change that reality? Is it possible to change that? Have we gone too far? When is enough enough? Like, these are all the questions that, you know, that I'm sort of asking while I'm watching it. But then at some point, there's a space in there where I'm trying to find understanding, which is almost crazy and silly to even try and do, but whatever. I'm just glad I'm not a teenager right now. Because I think that my generation, I think that we got the last valuable education. Like, because we're right there at that moment where, you know, like, you have to go to the library, you have to use the card catalog, you have to have a microfiche machine, and you put it in upside down and you squirrel it all around and you write on note cards, like that whole thing. But yet we know how to use the internet fairly effectively too. So it's like this weird world of analog and digital, which just kind of relates to my work too.
When did you know when it's time to go from thinking to creating? When you think about all of what you're talking about right now, when did you know when it's time to move, to go into your creative process?
I don't really. I'm so project oriented that I'm always searching for projects, whether it's me fishing, gardening. Like, we're sitting here in the studio and now, like, I'm thinking, like, John and I we're going to produce our Hot Fat album. Finally, we're going to get a membership to Wonder Root and record an album. So,
can I get it? One guest feature, though.
Yeah, sure.
On the album. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't ask for much.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, like, because, you know, Tindall's, he's like a good slide guitar player, which a lot of people don't know. And so I was an MC with a big recording contract a lot of people don't know. And so, whatever. It'll be fun.
How did Tindall Meachy come together, since John is sitting right here in the corner?
At a restaurant. His paintings were hanging on the wall, and someone told me, like, hey, you need to come see these paintings. This dude's painting exactly like you. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And when I actually saw the work, I was like, wow, this guy's cool. You know, I want to meet this dude, you know. And then I got a job at the place, and they had, like, artist meetup, whatever. And I went there to meet John, and it was just, like, this white dude from Florida or the beach. And I was like, oh, you're a white dude. He was like, yeah, everybody gets, you know, everybody thinks I'm a black dude. You know, so from that, it was just that. We just had a friendship, which is, like, 12 years now, I think. It's pretty awesome. This guy's Jimmy Buffett style going.
You talked about being very project oriented, yeah. And I wanted to get your perspective on being one of the featured artists in the Wonder Root CSA, because that was and is a very interesting challenge for the artists who are involved, because you're creating on a scale of 50 works that for some artists can be very challenging. For some artists, it's, you know, not as challenging. So what was your perspective heading into creating your 50 pieces for that?
Well, I'd always had this idea of wanting to use mason jars and wanting to use, like, the elements from craft, or, like, elements from, like, you know, like Martha Stewart or Paula Deen or any of those chicks you see on TV, you know? It's something real attractive about that to me, like these elements of it. But then there's something, like, real sentimental about it too, which is attractive to me. And then I'm just a big fan of the mason jar. I mean, I have this collection of mason jars. I'm always Instagramming mason jars, and have this blue mason jar that I slept with for a little while I was working on the project. Like, I went out and sought out this rare blue mason jar, found it. So, what were you asking me, man? I was getting all crazy. I'm sorry with the cheese whiz.
The Wonder Root CSA.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm just fascinated by the mason jar, basically. So I wanted to come up with a project where I could use the mason jar and use the elements of craft, but also, in a way, sort of make a political statement, which my work tends to do on a sly anyways. So I came up with that project of stuffing the mason jars with cotton, and then imagining this farm where I found these cotton seeds, and now I'm offering the seeds to people so that they can go and grow their own cotton, you know, and pick their own cotton. Sorry.
Have you ever picked cotton?
Only when I steal it from my projects. It's getting close to that time, so I will be going to take more soon.
Where would you go to pick this cotton?
Wherever there's a cotton field. Like, on the way to the beach, there's a cotton fields, like right after Dothan or Eufaula. And then in my hometown, I'll usually go back to my hometown right around Thanksgiving or before and go hit those good old boys' fields.
You mentioned the word sentimental a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still get sentimental for the South?
Well, I have this love-hate relationship for it. I honestly think I should be on the West Coast somewhere surfing, fishing, and living sort of like a beach sort of lifestyle, you know, climbing mountains, hanging out with my chick, you know. She's a hiker, and I'm a fisherman, so like doing outdoor nature stuff away from all this humidity and sweat rags and oppression of all this stuff, you know. But there's this weird love-hate relationship that I have for it, and it's almost like I love to hate it and then I hate to love it, like, so it sort of keeps me going. It sort of keeps this fuel, you know, gives my fire fuel or whatever it may be. But I mean, I can't deny my origins or where I'm from, but I can only learn from it, you know. So hopefully I provide a different sort of perspective. Maybe.
Which needs which more? Do you think the South needs you more, or do you think you need the South more?
Yeah. Well, it's in me, you know what I mean? So I could leave and I could go do that West Coast thing. And I'll still have my
for
sensibilities,
how long,
you know what I mean?
For how long could you leave?
I mean, somebody once told me, it's like, man, I believe I could drop you anywhere in the world and you'll be fine, you know? So I think I'll be fine wherever I end up, you know, in the end. Like, if the dream comes true of having a mountain home and, you know, studio in the mountains and all that kind of stuff, I'll be totally fine being out of an urban environment, you know? But if it happens to be on the West Coast, I mean, woo, yeah, that would be dope, but I'd still be doing country-ass Southern boy shit, you know, just on a different coast. So I guess I need it. I can't, you know, I mean, you can't deny who you are. And that's what all my work is about. You can't deny history. You can't deny any of this stuff. You know what I mean? It's just, you find a new narrative to tell it. And I think that that's what makes John and our relationship so special, because I don't care who you are in contemporary art, now or then, there's never been a black dude and a white dude who has made the caliber of work that we've made anywhere. It just hasn't happened. And I would like to see somebody else somebody else tell me, like, who else is that? Like, I put that out to one of my collectors, like, show me somewhere where people have collaborated as long as we have, like, telling the story that we've told, you know what I mean? So,
what do you think keeps that collaboration in a good space?
Because we respect each other. Like, that's it, basically.
That's it, though? I mean,
communication.
Okay.
And it's a sharing of narratives and understanding, learning. Like, John had a show a week or two ago. I brought him a jar of pickles. He came down to my studio tonight. He brought me jalapeno jam. So it's like that kind of open sharing, you know what I mean? Just understanding. And yeah, that's it. And plus, you know, we got a lot of respect for each other, you know what I mean? He does good where I fall off, and I fall off, you know, and I do good where he falls off, you know. So that's what makes Tendo Meechee work.
When you think about not only your solo works, but also your work with John as Tendo Meechee, mm-hmm. what are you hoping to inspire or provoke from the audience who happens to cross your path?
Well, I want the purest sort of emotional response that I can get. Like once John and I were down in Florida painting, this girl bust out in tears. And we were like, okay, you know, like that's cool. So you want that kind of reaction to your work. And once I had a dude pull me aside and bust out in tears and was like, basically, thanks for sort of reversing the image for me. And he was from the UK, and he'd been called a wog his whole life. And I did this project about wog tar, and I just sort of kind of poked fun at it, you know, at the origins of it. And he broke down in tears and cried, you know. So I want the purest, most emotional sort of response, like whether you like it or you hate it or you don't understand it, or if you go back and Google it and then you go, oh... You know, like, so, like, that's the thing about my work, too. It's like, it's very Googleable. Like, if people have issues with the titles, if you would write down some of the titles or just try and, like, figure out the code, you know? Because there is a code, there's a narrative, there's all these things that are being said, and there's clues that are out there. But then again, that goes back to the microfiche, and that goes back to Google, you know, of having that instant thing for information, you know what I mean? So I just want the purest, most rawest emotional response that I can get.
As you work towards that, in any piece that you're working on, what is your iterative process like? I guess, how do you keep chipping away at it until you know that you have it, whatever that is?
Well, you know, it starts with an idea, like a big what if, you know what I mean? And then while you're in that what if stage, I allow myself to ask as many what ifs as I can, and then I try and catalog those what ifs and write them down. So like right now, I'm working on this project, We Been Goal, and that all came from one of the signs at a corner store, you know, like We Buy Goal. So I had this whole process that I'm going through, and I'm asking all these questions. Well, what if, or what happens if I do this, or what does it mean when I do this? So I'm always asking questions in my work and then looking for answers, and I don't know. Then at some point, you just start. And then you sort of have a focus point of this is the narrative of this body of work or whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? But then sometimes I'll just start and then I'll just go and then the questions will come as I'm working, you know.
You've been in Atlanta for almost 15 years at this point. How has your perception of the Atlanta arts community grown over that 15 years? Almost 15 years.
Well, I guess it's like with anything, like you come into an environment, or at least I came into an environment not knowing what to expect from that environment. And then you sort of find your way along the way. And like, supposedly like the journey is the best parts of it, you know, whatever. So yeah, it's been a fun ride, but like there's been ups and downs, and like there's been disappointments. And like when I first got here, I was like sending out work, you know, getting rejection letters and all this stuff. Then I created a character that I told like I told myself, like, I'm going to make people like this guy, and he's going to be ugly and all this stuff. And it was based off of a catfish. So I would give away these paintings, like, every week. So I gave away about 250 paintings. Went to the Mocha GA and, like, littered their gallery with these paintings, just all on cardboard, littered their parking deck with all the stuff. It's because I wanted people to know who I was, and I wanted people to know my work. So in some ways, it was like me doing, like, this whole Banksy sort of thing before people even thought about a Banksy or whatever. So I would pull, like, all these kind of stunts just to get people to notice me, you know. I remember one time when Castleberry Hills was, like, the art place, I sent out an email that says, I'm going to have an art show in every gallery tonight. If you find a piece, you can keep a piece. So I went and hung work in every gallery that I could sneak a piece into. So I would do, like, all these kind of stunts to make people know me. And I think when I got really noticed was I did a show at iDrum. I found my way to iDrum. I did a show at iDrum. And I had just seen Benjamin Jones, his work, and it was something real primitive and it's real scratchy and scrappy that I liked about it. It was awkward and weird. So, like, I began to look up all his work and look at all his work, so I was influenced by it. But then I signed his name to my paintings, but just using it as, like, a sort of design element. And the person that represented him was Marianne Lambert. And it was pretty funny when she walked in, she was looking at all this stuff, and she just bust out, "Who is signing my artist's name? Blah, 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 blah," you know. And then it comes this moment where you have to explain yourself. So I explained myself and how I was just using his name as a design element and blah, blah, blah. And she was basically like, "I want you to be in this show." And so from that, I got into a show at the Swan Coach House. And then as all this weird stuff started happening all at the same time. Like, John and I were doing shows together, and we would do this thing called the duel, where we flip a coin, paint in public, do all this stuff. And from that grew. Then I got a review in Art Papers magazine from Phil Oppenheimer or something. And so then it was like people began to know who this catfish was, you know. So I just kept trying. But then you always think, like, as you're going through this journey, you know, that there's always something lacking. And there's always something like, oh, it needs more of this or it needs more of that. But to jump to right now, not to tell you my whole artist story, but to jump to right now, there is a lot going on, you know. The communities are, the art community is trying its damnedest to make this thing work, you know. So, like, with what Michael Rooks has done over at the High, like, getting all those artists who are like your friends and your homeboys, and, you know, you go to the High Museum and you see your friends and your homeboys hanging on the wall. That's pretty fucking cool. That's a big jump. So it's going to take more gutsy and ballsy moves like Michael Rooks to make this thing grow even further, you know what I mean? So I think that galleries should take chances on guys like Tyndall and myself, and on guys like myself, and on guys like that are part of all the collectives that I'm a part of. Like, I think that it takes guts for curators and gallery owners and all these people to help make this scene, like, more. Like what you guys are doing over here for $10 a month, you can come to Wonder Root and do all this amazing stuff. Like, that's fucking rad. But, like, so to see it grow from, like, just throughout my journey, like, you actually see, like, looking back, you see it, like, now it's growing, people are trying, there's things like Flux, and there's things like Idea Capital, there's so many different things, you know what I mean, like, Burnaway's grown to what it what it is now. You know what I mean? So you see these seeds being planted. So, yeah, it's good. I think that my perspective is good now, you know? Like, I'm not so, what is it, angsty or whatever. Maybe I'm just getting old, but I don't know. If that answers your question.
Michi, you are a fisherman.
Yes.
Do you have a good fishing story?
Sure. You want to hear about the big one that got away, or?
Of course.
Well, I'll tell you the big one that I caught and how it pissed me off. So, like any other day, you know, you do your preparations, you go and you check your box and you check your reels and, you know, you got your snacks or you got your water bottles or whatever, and you go to your favorite spot. So I drive to my favorite spot, favorite zone. So I'm like, man, I'm going to catch this fish. I have a goal of catching like this 10-pound fish. And I know a place it's highly likely to catch this fish. You know what I mean? So I go to this place like normal, but this day it's like, man, it's gonna be good. Favorite song playing again, like, oh yeah, it's like, and so now it's in my head on the walk down the trail, you know, so I'm pumped. I get out there. I usually lure that I hardly ever use, which is a crankbait. I really don't like crankbaits. They look weird, but for some reason fish like them. But aesthetically, it's not pleasing to me. So, but I use that lure anyway because the conditions call for it. Threw it out. And I knew that there was a ridge in this part of the lake. And usually big fish hang out on this ridge. So, threw it out. Sure enough, there's a big female fish on this ledge. Boom, hooked the big fish. Reeling it in. It's flipping, it's flailing. And I'm like, this could be the fish that measures what I want, you know, to meet that goal that I've set for myself. I land it, get it up on the bank. There just happened to be a girl walking by, and she's freaking out, like, oh my God, what, that thing is huge, it's crazy. I'm freaking out, yeah, it's a pretty big fish, you know. But this crankbait has double treble hooks. Treble hooks are, one hook has three hooks. So it's like a, looks like a claw almost. So there's two sets of trebles, so there's six hooks. As I'm reaching down to pick this fish up, to lip this fish and remove this crankbait, this big female fish decides to shake one last time, and she shakes a treble hook into my hand past the barb. So I have like a 7 or 8 pound fish with the hook still in its mouth, with a barb in my free hand. And this fish is flailing like a big fish. And the girl's freaking out, blood's running down my hand. And I asked her, I was like, are you afraid of fish? And she was like, no. I was like, will you remove this fish off the thing, you know? So she's trying. And luckily, a guy walks by, and I was like, man, are you afraid of fish? He was like, no. He was like, will you help me with this fish? So he was like, how in the hell? And I was like, I'll tell you later. So he takes the fish off the hook. He was like, man, that's a big fish. I was like, yeah. He was like, I'm more interested in how are you going to get this barb out? How are you going to get this lure out of your hand, like this hook? I got my pliers, and I was like, okay. It's like, this is how this works. It's like, we're going to count to three. And I was like, okay, everybody, let's go to three. And they were like, one. And then on two, I just, boom, pulled it straight out. And the dude was like, that's it? And I was like, yeah, that's how it works. So I got a photo with the fish. The girl stayed. She took a photo with the fish. But in the photo, it's on my Facebook or Instagram. You can see there's blood running down my hand, like with this giant fish. So that's the one that I caught, and then it sucked anyways.
The one you caught but sucked anyways.
Yeah.
Michi Miko, artist extraordinaire, let everyone know how they can learn more about your work and get in contact with you.
You can go to my website, michimiko.com, or on Facebook. I don't do Twitter. Or you can follow me on Instagram, and that's all under my name. But if you go to my website, it's simply a static page that says Gone Fishing. And it's been down for 4 or 5 months right now, maybe 6. And I'm sort of having my own little silent protest against museums and galleries or whatever. Because I guess I still got some angst in me. But I guess the reason why I'm doing it is because, like, every time you go visit a gallery website or whatever it is, it'll be so-and-so contemporary or so-and-so gallery, you know, like, they always say, we don't accept unsolicited materials, or we're not accepting artist submissions right now. So, again, getting pissed by that, like, I'm asking questions like, well, how do I seek out these opportunities, and how do I show my work to people if you're not accepting work? And so then I began to think about it. Well, I was like, well, screw them. If more artists had an attitude like me, sort of, in some ways, then there would be no art for you to look at. Like, so I just took my website down. And so now if someone wants to contact me, they have to figure it out. Either you got to know me or you don't. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's a bad attitude to have, but I want galleries and museums to sort of go around the bend the way artists have to go to sort of get a show, you know what I mean? So if you meet me out in public, well, then boom, it's your lucky day. You can get my number or email address or something like that. But other than that, my website's just Gone Fishing. Or you can just Google Michimiko. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad idea. But right now, I'm sticking to it because I'm always fishing.
Do you think that the galleries have gotten comfortable?
Galleries? What do you mean?
In terms of your protest.
I don't think anybody cares. I don't think anybody noticed that my website's down. I don't know if people even pay attention to art, or I don't know. It's just one of those things that I did because I felt at that time like I'm going to do this, and I did it, you know. It's my website. And so I've just been making work. I just haven't put up a new website or anything. And but I did meet this lady from the Woodruff not long ago. And she was like, I went to your website, but it just says you're going fishing. I was like, yeah, I am going fishing. She was like, I want to ask you about this project, you know. I want you to be a part of this project. And she was like, well, how do I get in contact with you? I was like, you're doing it right now. And so I sort of explained that kind of idea, what I was doing, and she just fell out laughing. So maybe people go to my website, or maybe they don't. Maybe I just need to put up a new fishing photo or something. I don't know. I'm having fun with it all. Garden, fishing, hanging out, all of it. Just having fun.
Michimiko, thank you for your time.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, no problem.